Hey, it's Andrew and Ed here from the Property Academy podcast.
Just before we get into these podcasts with Ilse, just want to mention that these were actually recorded before the government's tax changes. Now, that actually makes them more relevant. And to talk about how to beat the government's tax changes by cash flow hacking your property portfolio, we are hosting a webinar with Ilse. I'm going to drop a link to that in the show notes, but until then, enjoy the podcast. Welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're once again joined by Ilse Wolfe, who is a professional property investor. Ilse, welcome along to the show.
Thank you very much again.
Now, in our last episode yesterday, we talked about how you got into property investment and your first investment property. What I want to do today is move along to your more recent purchases, because there are some fascinating ones that I know you've done, and I just want to share those with everyone so they can see what is still possible with property investment and the uptick you're able to get in a property's value if you're really smart and clued up. So if it's okay, can we start with this Hamilton one? I've been talking about this for a year.
You have actually. The number of times I've heard you refer to this property.
It's amazing. I was just amazed at the value uplift.
Yeah, so this is a house I came across by chance, actually. I was around the corner renovating at one of our other properties in Glenview, Hamilton, and came across this absolute pearl on the market. This is what I would search high and low for. And oddly, it was sitting right there on the main road coming into Hamilton. So on my lunch break, I popped around, called the agent, met him there. I was blown away by this house. It was a two-story, 140 square meter house, completely run down. It was tenanted, not particularly hygienic tenants, I must say, because there were cockroaches everywhere.
Oh, I know. I've had rat's nests, but not cockroaches.
Like the floor was moving, kind of cockroaches. Rip out a wall, the walls were moving. So it was completely infested, but it was...
And you thought, there's a banger right there.
Yeah, here's a deal.
It was close to a roundabout where you would slow down as you drove through. So I was just astounded that with thousands of cars going past each day, this property had not sold, but had also been on the market for 9 months in a growing market in Hamilton. So I realised that what I discovered actually was that there were a couple of papers missing in the council file, one being that a secondary dwelling on the property actually hadn't been consented for its plumbing. So I think that was enough to scare away most investors.
Yes.
And I would say that really it came down to not knowing what questions or who to ask those questions to.
And probably first home buyers as well, because often if you've got something that is defective, you're not going to be able to get insurance for it. Therefore, you're not going to be able to get lending on it. And so it just doesn't work.
And walk us through, for anybody who's brand new to the show, Ilse, what does it mean if you've got an unconsented dwelling on that property?
Yeah. So effectively means that you have a defective title. So as Andrew mentioned, insurance is very difficult to get on that property until it's remedied, but it also highlights the fact that it's an illegal dwelling and you should not be renting that property out as a dwelling until the paperwork has been completed with council. So once I inquired and probed the agent with a few questions around this, I also discovered that he really did not understand what a gold mine he was sitting on. So
had he had it the entire 9 months that it was on the market?
He had.
And
he
had they had many offers, did you know?
Not an offer.
Not even
not
one
an offer.
Because you normally expect someone to go in there, make an offer, get it to their lawyers, and then the lawyer say, don't buy this house.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. Once he told me this, I thought, okay, keep my cool. Don't show him that I really understand what I'm standing on here. So I popped an offer on paper. He was gobsmacked. He did not expect that.
What was your offer?
I'm just surprised. I've had it for 9 months and now I'm finally getting an offer. We should start buying some more properties from this guy.
He must be a very green agent, the poor guy.
Actually, he wasn't. But when the survey came around to ask me, what did I think on a scale of 1 to 10 how this agent was? I wanted to say, well, from my perspective, he was a 10.
Fantastic, yeah.
You should have said that he was a 10 so that he gets good feedback. You can go buy some more properties off him. That's what I'd be thinking.
Totally.
But tell me, what did you put down on this offer? Because I know you negotiated a hell of a deal here.
Exactly. Well, part of the BRRRR strategy, or with the BRRRR strategy, the most important letter within that acronym is the B. If you buy well, you bank instant equity or capital gain. It is the highest hourly amount of money you can make by just taking that time to negotiate properly. So the house itself was currently valued online at roughly $575,000. I put an offer in for $455,000, thinking that was, you know, reasonable as a starting point. They accepted that. No questions asked. They'd been so motivated after 9 months that they took that.
What were your conditions?
I tried to go in as clean as possible with one due diligence clause. Yeah.
And did the agent kick up a fuss about that? Because that's one of the hardest clauses to get in a contract with an agent, particularly in a hot market that we're seeing today.
No, well, I think by presenting a clean cover sheet for the sale and purchase document by having no to LIM Finance, as long as I just go in with that 10 working days due diligence, it usually gets me across the line.
Well,
And to be honest, I had primed him to explain to the vendor that, look, there are a lot of defects with this property. You know, it's going to cost me a lot to get this back up to standard and make it legal.
Mm. Now, my understanding is, though, that you got it cheaper than 455.
That's correct. So, of course, that was my starting point, Ed. Once I'd had a few conversations with council, collected a few quotes and professional opinions from my builder and some of my network in Hamilton, I came back and said, look, I'll be overpaying for this property if I go at 455. We managed to negotiate down to 425. So from that conversation alone, we made $30,000 equity.
So it wasn't enough that you'd already offered 120K less than what the eval was, recognising that that eval was probably not very accurate given the defectiveness of the property. You also got the extra 30K off in the end.
Yes, that's right.
Fantastic. So what did you do to it?
So the next letter in the acronym, so the R, so the renovate, which is the second most important one, you know, looking how to add the most value. I recognised that this property was very close to the local schools, but also very close to Hamilton Hospital. So either as a room by room or for a family who would be moving to the area, possibly for the school or to work with the hospital, in the hospital, we converted it from a 3-bedroom, 2-bath into a 4-bedroom, 2-bath. So that was now a large 140 square metre home.
Did you do that by adding on the actual room or just partitioning?
By partitioning. So what we did was we added that 4th bedroom by reconfiguring the footprint.
Yes.
And that was relatively cost effective because the floor plan was relatively favourable for that.
Yes. No structural moves?
No structural moves. Yeah. And then in the meantime, again, during that pre-settlement phase, I worked with the council and a draftsman to complete the process for a resource consent and building consent. That added maybe $7,000 to the cost. Total cost of the renovation was around $70,000. And we doubled the income on that site now that we could legally separate those tenancies to $1,040 per week.
And tell me, I know that at the moment you're in that harvester stage, you're really focusing on passive income. What sort of passive income does this property provide for you guys now?
Yeah, so this property has been fantastic for us. We now bring in $2,000 per month as, you know, freehold income for ourselves.
After costs. $26,000 a year.
Yeah.
$24,000 a year if I was better at maths.
I need to build you a spreadsheet for these simple calculations. Clearly needs it in front of them.
It's a Friday.
That's actually set a new benchmark for me now. So now I really try to establish that as my best practice.
That's great. Mm.
And tell me, are you only now going after properties like this that have defective things that are very clearly wrong with them so that other buyers aren't able to get lending or insurance on them so that it kind of takes competition out of the market and you can get that big uplift? Is that the only way we're able to see such big gains in the current market?
That's a really good question. I think particularly with the properties that I try to search for, they are usually properties that first home buyers or families would not look twice at. Mm. We're taking properties from the bottom rung of the pecking order and converting them from mouldy or rundown or outdated properties and turning them into healthier, modern homes. And I think at the core of it, while the numbers always need to stack up, at the centre of the project, I'm always thinking about who is going to be the end tenant for that property.
Yes.
And then what I do is try and work out, okay, what is the way, again, I can sort of cash flow hack and renovate this property to extract the most value?
So explain that cash flow hack, because I've heard you mention that a couple of times. What does that mean?
Right. So it's actually once I'm on site, having viewed the property through the photos and getting a general understanding of how I think I'll renovate the property, I will then run through my process once I'm on site to understand, okay, who is the end tenant for this property and what do they need? I'll then look at, okay, could this potentially be a room by room rental? Could we look to add an additional income? Is it worth going through that council process of paying for that council process to consent an additional dwelling? Or are there ways we can enhance the single dwelling as it is? So there are a number of questions I need to ask to evaluate on site and then work out what is going to be the best return on my investment to make the most suitable product for that area.
And I guess that's the next star, the renting of it to make sure that you are going to have that long-term cash flow. Walk us through that last R then, the refinancing, and maybe we'll come back to this Hamilton property that we've been talking about for most of this episode. How did you refinance this out so that you could then repeat afterwards?
Okay, so I have a great relationship with my property manager in Hamilton, actually. So even in that due diligence phase, I had him come out to the site and I talked him through on site, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I forecast those final numbers for the rent values for both the main house and the smaller secondary dwelling with him so that I knew my end values. And that's the critical part, is understanding not only what the numbers are to buy well, but also what the end point will be. With him, he was able to already go through his database and go through various different methods to make sure that we had a tenant tenant for the main house by the time we had already completed that renovation. In this instance, we actually ended up finding a couple of English doctors who came out post-COVID, quarantined for 2 weeks, but they actually chose our listing while they were still in England.
Wow.
They took the photos from the renovation, they signed up, they put the deposit down before they had even left England. They landed, went through quarantine. So we had very little wear and tear on this house. It was a doctor couple on different night shifts. They also had two lap dogs, but their lap dogs would go to daycare. So
amazing.
So very little wear and tear. We had two people and two lap dogs living part-time in a four-bedroom, two-bath house.
How good, how good. And then walk us through, because I know that with the LVR restrictions coming in, and I realised that you were managing this property and this renovation during the wake of COVID where those LVR restrictions weren't in place. Mm. But how did this refinance out so you were able to take your deposit and your renovation costs back to keep on repeating?
Okay. This particular property was just worked in favour in so many ways. One of those ways was the fact that with it being multi-income, the way that it was valued more like a commercial property. So it was valued on a cap rate, which meant that what we would take is that $140 per week times 52 weeks a year divided by the capital rate in that time at the moment in the market gave us a really high value. And from that, we were able to actually extract all of our funds, both the deposit and the renovation funds, completely to recycle.
And actually, we haven't even said what it was worth at the end.
Yeah, so it came back at $850. It actually, in theory, on the capital rate in the market at that time should have been valued at around $910,000, but the valuer came back at the time having compared to what was actually selling on the market, and he adjusted it back because he felt that that was actually too high a rent in his opinion to be getting in the market.
Oh, don't you love when someone who's not an expert in rents gives you an expert opinion?
Yeah, but here's the thing. How amazing is this? You bought this property for $425,000. You spent $70,000 on it, so $495,000 all up, and then you revalue it at $850,000. So we're talking about $355,000 of equity gain over, it was a 7 week renovation?
7 weeks, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And I guess that's the power of what you were saying at the start of buying well, getting the B right, already knowing what you're going to do to renovate to it so that you can refinance out and keep that deposit there. Amazing. Amazing.
Thanks.
These numbers are amazing, and anyone listening to this podcast, I'm sure, wants to run out there and buy a property in Hamilton that's filled with cockroaches. But this isn't something for every investor. So what kind of investors would this kind of strategy suit?
Great question. This is a strategy for those who wish to grow long-term wealth and also have the option of the same strategy to earn passive income. Anyone can learn the strategy, but who it suits are those people who wish to accelerate their financial path and their financial goals. First of all, needing to know what their goal is. And it is for those who want to be more active in their property investment journey. They can either be hands-on and do the work themselves or not, but effectively it means that you don't have to wait for that organic market growth.
And so in terms of being involved, what you mean there is actually, you know, being on the tools a lot of the time or having the money to pay someone else. So kind of rough numbers now, if you were to take on a project like this, I guess you need to have your 40% deposit up front and you need to have the renovation money, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it is a given with LVR changes that 40% isn't for everybody. You need to have enough usable equity within your own home or your portfolio to go with the strategy at the moment.
And the key thing is the renovations as well.
And being able to project manage that and then also being out at the open homes, being comfortable negotiating these things. But certainly if you've got the ability to do that or the knowledge to be able to do it and certainly the finances as well, there is money that is there to be made because there are a lot of properties out there that are run down, and it's a good thing that we're renovating them in order to get them on the market and make them livable again. Now, just walk us through as well, how did you grow from your first property where perhaps your net worth was about $1 million and now you're up at that kind of 10, 12 mark? What did that growth phase look like?
After that first renovation that I illustrated in Mangere, we subsequently went on to a couple of other renovations, but I did get the feeling that we weren't maximising those end values, and I just got the feel that my expertise wasn't there. I knew I had a huge knowledge gap. So we decided at that point that we needed some expertise to guide us along. Taylor and I are both very interested in self-development and to grow ourselves. We needed to learn from someone who actually had the results that we were looking for. So what we decided to do was enroll in a coaching program as students, and we were able to grow our portfolio, taking their program on board, and we grew from 1 million to about 6 million. That was really exciting, you know, the chase of looking for high capital gain properties in as central as we could buy within Auckland. And we bought a quick succession of three properties with them within about 6 months.
That's great. And how much did that program cost? Because it sounds like obviously that was quite useful.
Super valuable. That program was $20,000 plus GST.
And how do you justify spending that amount of money?
For us, it was a no-brainer decision, really. We wanted to grow. We were determined to grow our portfolio, knowing that we could buy well and through adding value through the renovation with this BRRRR strategy. We knew that with one successful renovation, we would make that value back within 2 months.
Did Taylor take some convincing there, or was he on board straight away with that, spending the 20K?
I think at that point he was addicted to the process well. So. Okay.
And also, I think it's really important to just note for everybody listening to the show as well that we're not really talking about buying and flipping or trading here. We're talking about buying, renovating, and holding over the long term, aren't we?
Exactly. Yeah, this is a long-term wealth growing strategy. So this is buying, renovating within a very short period of time to create significant wealth and equity or on paper for yourself, with the operable word being repeat, to rinse and repeat the strategy as many times as often as possible to accelerate us towards our goal.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Really helps us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you want to learn more about this BRRRR strategy, come along to our next webinar. It is happening in April, where Ilse is going to join Andrew and I to talk about how New Zealand investors can run the BRRRR strategy in today's market with these new LVR restrictions. I'm going to drop a link to that in the bio, so just tap or swipe over the cover art, you'll find it in there, or just go to opuspartners.co.nz. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Eb McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.